If living in a participatory democracy means getting involved, one of the first obstacles laying in wait is the other people also wanting to participate. They have different viewpoints that can range from sympathetic to wildly controversial. Dislike and distrust can run rampant. Arguments inevitably break out. Civil discourse can then turn into civil war with no solution in sight. So how then do you find the path towards solutions that benefit everyone? Traditionally, it's been a top-down approach. Leaders go through the motions of listening to their constituents, but political agendas, special interest groups, they all exert pressure to push ideologies, corporate needs, and profit margins. So what then? Well, it's easy to point fingers and blame others, to find an enemy and then fight against them. Adam Kahane, a conflict resolution specialist who has worked with seemingly intractable global issues such as the civil war in Colombia and the turmoil in Guatemala, points out that we have to set aside the hierarchical approach and learn to accept that finding solution requires a shift to collaborative thinking. We asked Mr. Kahane to join us for a conversation that matters about a model of collaboration with people that we may disagree with, but that can lead to outcomes that improve lives and meet the needs of the people who need the solutions the most.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Adam Kahane, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you.
Collaborating with the enemy, I was fascinated by reading your book. And as I first started to read it, I was thinking about what a powerful word collaboration is. In one sense, it says we get along, and in another sense, it says we betray.
Yeah.
What led you to write this book?
Well, it was noticing how important collaboration is and how it's necessary to deal with the issues we have to deal with, and how everybody's promoting it and talking about how it's the important thing, but not really owning up to how difficult it is. And the reason it's difficult is exactly that other sense that if I collaborate with you, if I try to work with you, what am I going to have to give up? What am I going to have to even betray?
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I thought that tension was intrinsic to collaboration, and that's what I wanted to try to understand better.
So, yes, you get into that definition between the two and understanding how that works, but then you take it one step further into what you call stretch collaboration. How do you define stretch collaboration?
Well, the thing I realized is that one of the reasons collaboration seems so impossible is that the common model of collaboration is based on assumptions that just don't hold up. The common model, which I think is what most people imagine when they think about collaboration, is we're going to agree on what's important here, we're going to be a team, we're going to agree on the problem, we're going to agree on the solution, we're going to agree on the plan. In other words, it's all going to be under control.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, that's really never true. It's never under control, and so that way of collaborating doesn't work, at least not for any of the things I'm working on. And so stretch collaboration is how do you work together when none of those things are true?
Well, when I first started to read the book, I thought, okay, you're talking about big, intractable problems like, you know, the civil war in Colombia, or, you know, what was going on in Guatemala for so many years, and Thailand, and yes, you talk about those things, but as I start to realize it, it doesn't happen just there, it can happen everywhere, and I think the thing that struck me the most is you went, so what do you do when you can't even agree on what the problem is?
Yeah. Well, this for me was really the interesting part, is I noticed that the stuff that was happening in these big situations I was working on, including those three countries
and others,
healthcare in the US and Aboriginal rights in Canada, etc., that the dynamics in these big dramatic issues were the same dynamics I was noticing at work, in my community, in my family, that on the one hand, we need to work with other people, we need to exist with other people, but often we really have disagreements. Mm-hmm. And this tendency, this habit of making the other out to be the enemy, saying, I just can't work with that person anymore, that this shows up everywhere. Mm-hmm. This shows up in organizations, in families. And so my argument, or the thing I started to understand, is it's the same basic tension everywhere. We think we need to work with these other people, and we really don't see how we're going to be able to. And that's really what I tried to unpack.
Underlying all that, is that because our basic understanding of what collaboration is that we agree on the goal and somebody leads and somebody acquiesces? I know that I'm pulling a number of different things out of your book and trying to condense them down. But when you take a look at it, it's so often we see in collaborative efforts that somebody is going, okay, well, I guess I'll buy into that, and so therefore I have to give up on what I believe in or what I think is true. And the moment you start doing that, you're kind of dooming yourself towards a mediocre result at best, if not outright failure.
I think that's the essence of it, is our habitual way of operating is hierarchical. Like, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to talk about this, but in the end, it's going to be the way I want it to be. And so this assumption of control, of hierarchy, is often what's underneath. And so the collaboration in that sense is fake and is doomed to failure for exactly the reason you've said. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a deeper reason, which is that when people say, look, we have to change what we're doing around here to deal with whatever we're trying to deal with, what they really mean is you need to change what you're doing. And this habit, this which I notice in lots of people, I notice in myself, that our first thought is, what do they have to do differently? Mm-hmm. That this is a bad start. This is a very bad start.
Mm-hmm. As I was reading and you were talking about how to start to deal with this from a different perspective, I got to appreciate the fact that a lot of times you're asking people who have been handed the responsibility of leading an organization, and in some ways you're saying to them, okay, you need to surrender the idea that you have the answer or you know the way, and that you have to demonstrate a willingness to work together and in a way that you may not be able to, at this point, see the path or even what the outcomes are. And is that not like a terrifying thing?
Yes, I think the standard model, which is somebody's in charge, they consult with others or they listen to others, but basically they say it's going to be like this and you need to do this for us to get there. This is much more straightforward. This is the model we're used to. Mm-hmm. And yes, the idea that actually you're not going to do what I say, that we're going to have to figure this out together, that I can't control what you're going to do, that I can't make you do anything, and that actually, I don't know what's going to work. We're going to head out that way, and we're going to have to just see how we get to. So all of this, all of these different aspects of not being in control are very unnerving, and that's why most collaboration fails. So what I am trying to work on in my work, but also in the book, is, well, how can you collaborate under those circumstances where you're not in control?
So what are the essential elements of being able to do that in those circumstances where you're going, I got people who are watching me, they want me to be accountable, they want results, but I'm going to agree to enter this. How do you get started? How do you start to move into there? What are some of the essential elements?
The most important thing for getting started, why would anybody do this? The answer is they'd only do it if the normal way isn't working.
Isn't working.
So that for me is the only reasonable starting point, is if I could just do this my way, if I could say we're going this way and I know the way, well, I'll do it. That's fine. That doesn't take collaboration. That takes whatever, good
determination
right. or giving clear orders or whatever.
Yeah.
If that works, fine. I'm interested in the case where it doesn't work and where people have already figured out that they're not going to be able to get to where they want to go with that method.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore that they need to collaborate, they need to find a way to work with others, even with people they don't agree with or like or trust. As for what the essence of it is, I think it's three things that are very simple, but it turns out not at all easy. The first is to, and they're all about seeing how things really are in life, not about how our fantasy is about the way they ought to be.
So how do you do that when you've started to isolate yourself within the power cocoon you occupy?
Well, I think people only do it when they, when they're so frustrated with not getting where they want to go that they're willing to try something different. And to realize the reality is there are differences, there's conflict. We can't, we might wish it wasn't so, but it is so, so we have to deal with it. That's the first thing. Secondly, we might wish we had a clear path where we could see exactly what would work, but often, actually, we have no idea what'll work. We have an idea, but we don't know if it's going to work. So the second element is to be willing to experiment, to feel our way forward. And the third element is, in a way, the most fundamental, which is what happened if I just give up thinking that I can tell other people what to do? Anyhow, nobody's listening to us. I mean, nobody does anything. I mean, nobody does things you want them to do, or at least except under very specific circumstances. Certainly nobody in large social systems is listening to somebody else. So, So how can I make the habit, instead of focusing on what am I doing, what's my role in this, what do I need to do next?
Time commitment. How important is the willingness of the participant in this to say, I'm going to devote time to working this out?
Yeah. So the time's important, and something also that's important and is equally challenging, I think, these days, is the willingness to pay attention, which means to turn off the cell phone and to say, okay, I'm going to spend the next 3 days or 3 hours or even 1 hour just paying attention and really trying to understand what's happening here and what are you going on about and what's important to you and what's possible here. So it's time, and I think even more precious, attention.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about very basic skills of how can I, just for a minute, put aside what I'm sure is true about this and what you just have to understand to, well, how are you looking at this and why is that important to you? And I might not agree with you, but let me at least try to understand what's going on for you here and, well, if that's going on for you and this is going on for me, could we find a way forward? Rather than, you're bad, I don't trust you, I can't work with you, and therefore, go away.
So as you're saying that, I'm thinking, okay, that means I have to open up my ears and have a willingness to actually hear you, not just listen, but hear you, absorb that, and I have to be willing to let go of what I think about you, what I think about this situation. And those are big asks.
Yeah. The verb I like is not so much let go, although I think that's an aspect of it, but suspend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I have this idea about who you are and what I think of you and whether I agree with you or disagree with you or what I think of your ideas or what I think about what you want. And I'm just going to suspend it as if from a string in front of me. And so this is my idea. I'm going to be open about this. This is how I think about things. And we can look at it, and you can challenge it, and you can question it, and I can look at it objectively. Maybe at the end of the conversation, I'm going to take this back, and I'm going to say, you know, I still think the same thing. But maybe by suspending it, I'm going to say, well, you know, this isn't the best way to think about this.
Yeah.
So it's this, I once had a colleague who said, when you find yourself pounding the table with, with complete conviction, just put in my opinion at the beginning of the sentence. And if that doesn't work, put in my humble opinion. And it's a joke, but in a way it's just that little bit of distance saying, this is what I think. I'm not hiding what I think, but it's just my opinion about this. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, it suggests to me that you have to be willing to be vulnerable as well. And I'm going to admit that perhaps I don't understand your perspective. And so I think that that's challenging. You know, it's almost like you have to go to that beginner's frame of mind. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on here, so enlighten me, rather than, okay, tell me what you were thinking when you did that.
Well, I like that phrase, beginner's mind. The only thing I'd say differently is, it's not as though you have to give up everything and open up your belly to be stabbed. You can make calculated risks. Like, okay, I'm gonna listen to this person, I'm gonna go and visit him in his community and see what he experiences. I'm not saying I'm going to agree. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm going to go along. I'm not promising that. So my point a little bit is that what I'm trying to do is lower the bar to collaboration. It's actually not that I have to say at the beginning, okay, we're going to do this thing together. I'm going to surrender. I'm going to let go. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But let's start and see where we get to.
It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to surrender, because I like the point that you make about Nelson Mandela, who goes, well, I'm not always going to surrender. Or David Suzuki, when he said, unless it's going to be this way, I'm not doing this. And at first, you seemed to be a little bit like at odds with that, and then you came to realize, no, you have to do that at times.
The thing that took me a long time to understand is collaboration has to make a place for fighting. That collaboration where it's always harmonious won't work, because there are differences. There are real differences of perspective and opinion and understanding and needs, and it doesn't do any good for me to say, well, why don't you just put your interests aside here? Let's focus on the whole here. This is an illegitimate request.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually a manipulative request. Why don't you put aside what matters to you? Let's focus on what matters to me.
Going back to the hierarchical model that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is what took me the longest time to understand, is that collaboration has to be able to work with real conflict. And if it can't, you'll get stuck. And that's a big thing, because there's lots of people, me included, who really don't like conflict. We just want it to all be quiet and peaceful, and that's not a productive stance at all.
So how'd you get beyond that? How did you start to say, okay, I can get a bit more comfortable, not necessarily entirely comfortable, with the idea that there will be conflict?
Yeah, well, I think some people are more comfortable with that than others. It might have to do with family or culture or I don't know what. For me, it was the understanding that we're never going to get anywhere if we can't express our differences. And it doesn't mean we have to. I want to do it in a way that's safe, that nobody's going to get killed or irreparably damaged. But this might be uncomfortable for a while.
Right.
So the reason I use the word stretch is to connote it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be out of your comfort zone. It's going to be, not what you're used to, but that's the only way to work with people you don't agree with or like or trust.
As you put this together and look back on it, I couldn't help but think, in many ways, you're talking about a Canadian kind of dynamic to me. We have differences, we don't like one another, we do all sorts of things, but somehow we seem to muddle along and find ways to get along together? Like, how else could you have Quebec and Ontario, you know, in one country having different legal systems, yeah, not liking one another, and still we kind of like muddle our way through? And so how much has the Canadian experience sort of helped to shape your worldview on this?
Well, I think it has more than I appreciated. Doesn't mean that Canadians are always good at this, and
no,
there's lots of times we fail badly. But I think the argument that there is something in the Canadian DNA, which maybe has to do with English and French and Indigenous, or that understands pluralism. And for mm-hmm. me, I become more and more interested in this word pluralism. Pluralism means we're different. I mean, that we may have things in common, mm-hmm. but there's also differences, and they may be permanent differences. And the crucial thing is, how can we live together with real and permanent differences and disagreements, rather than this assumption, mm-hmm. well, maybe if we go out for a beer, maybe if we talk about it, maybe if we work together, we'll become the same or agree. Mm-hmm. What if we're never going to be the same? What if we're never going to agree? How do we coexist and get on with things and have a healthy society and all able to express who we are? That's, I think, a Canadian idea.
And I think that that is the challenge in an interconnected world, a pluralistic society, and even in organizations that we work for and marriages.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, this idea that I'm only going to be able to work with you if you're like me and if you agree with me, I don't think this is workable. It isn't workable in any of the circumstances you mentioned. It's certainly not workable in a marriage.
Right. Well, I appreciate you writing this book. I actually got a lot out of it, and it was rewarding and enriching to hear you say some of these things that I had struggled with in the past but couldn't articulate.
Great.
Thank you very much for
Thank
coming
you.
In and doing this.